Thank you so much for the introduction. And thank you for the invitation to be here today. It's so great to see all of you. It seems like from a lot of different places, which is fun, given that we can't physically travel right now. I can travel through you in your various locations. So thank you also for that. So again, today's talk is going to be on not knowing and how we can do that on purpose, how we can shift from, oh no, I don't know, towards don't know as a way of being more spacious in the world. So I'm going to be talking about that in a little bit, but first I'd like for all of us to sit in meditation together. So go ahead and find your comfortable place, and I'll ring the bell to get us started. In Zen meditation, as in every other kind of meditation, practice starts with the body. So please check in with your body. Feel your knees planted on the cushion beneath you, or if you're in a chair, feel your feet evenly distributed. And feel your seat connected with the cushion underneath it. And let these three points, two knees or two feet, and your seat, make a very stable base for you. Feel the floor underneath and the earth underneath that. And feel yourself rooted deep into the earth, grounded. No matter what's going on in the world, the earth is here under our feet, holding us. And from this very grounded place, allow your spine to stretch upwards, becoming long. Feel the space between your bones as you move upwards in your spine and in your ribs, on up your upper back, your neck, and to the crown of your head. Feel the crown of your head connected with the sky and with vast space above. And then fully occupy everything between heavens and the earth, filling up all the space. Let go behind your eyes. Let go in your face, in your jaw. Let go in your neck and in your shoulders. You can raise up your shoulders and then drape them over your body. Let your chest be soft and allow your breath to settle into your lower belly, breathing from there. Please don't force it. Just give it permission to settle. What is your intention? If you don't know, you can simply say, I vow to wake up for the benefit of all beings. Let your intention reorient you. And then drop it. Simply follow your breath from your lower belly. Let go of your day and the past. Let go of your thoughts, returning to your breath. Each time you notice a thought, let go of your ideas or your worries about the future. And simply be right here, right now, following your breath. Allowing this present moment to hold you. And you can let go of even that. Simply rest in the space of not knowing. When thoughts arise, when your mind wanders, simply notice, drop it, come back to your breath, letting go. Letting go can be so freeing. Ask yourself, what am I? And answer, don't know. How far does that don't know reach? To your body, your skin, the room you're in. Your neighborhood. In all directions, including behind you. How big is don't know? See if you can rest and don't know. So we'll prepare for the talk. If you need to adjust your posture, go ahead and do that. This is your chance. I will do. We'll come into this space together. In the Zen tradition, we usually start a talk with a chant. So I'd like to do that. An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's true meaning. So again, thank you again for having me here today. I'm very excited to practice together from people from such a wide range of places. It really shows us how interconnected we all are. Today's talk is going to be on not knowing, and I'm going to start by saying I have no idea why there are helicopters flying behind my house. And I also don't know when they will stop, so I'll apologize for that. My name is Tengku Ruff, and I am a Soto Zen Buddhist priest. I live in Beacon, New York, and my temple is Beacon Zen Temple. I also work as a professional chaplain at a local hospital, which is pertinent to this talk because it's really an immersion in not knowing in this particular time in the world. So To start with a verse from the Song of Mind, which is a sutra that comes from the 7th century. Knowing dharmas is not knowing. Not knowing is knowing the essential. The highest principle cannot be explained. It is neither free nor bound. Lively and attuned to everything, it is always right before you. So again, this is from Song of Mind. And I felt the need to check my microphone. You can hear me okay, right? Thank you. Okay. Knowing dharmas is not knowing, and not knowing is knowing the essential. But we often get into this place where we think of not knowing as something scary or negative. And indeed, there's a lot we need to know or we learn in terms of the dharma. You know, there's the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Noble Path and the Four Foundations of Mindfulness and the six paramitas, etc. So there's a lot to know and a lot to learn. And there's also a lot to not know. So we can get into this thinking that not knowing is something that happens to us, something passive or even negative. You know, if you think when the teacher calls on you in school and you're like, I don't know, you know, that definitely is not a nice feeling. There's some things we just can't know. You know, it's impossible to know what's going to happen tomorrow. Will this pandemic ever end? Will my family be okay? And what are these helicopters for? There's some things we just can't know. And we can get into this mode where we think that's a bad thing. It feels scary not knowing sometimes. What I wanted to do today is invite you to shift your perspective and see what it feels like to not know on purpose. When we make not knowing an intentional action, there's a lot of space. And what's going to happen tomorrow? I don't know. But anything could happen in that spaciousness. It's really big. There are infinite possibilities. And this can give us a lot of freedom in our practice. It's when we really take in the Dharma, the teachings, and start to ingest them and digest them and make them part of who we are as an everyday practice, as an everyday way of being in the world, that they start to become real. And when this happens, the possibilities are limitless. I have this friend, Edie. She's an extrovert. And I am not an extrovert. And I said, you know, Edie, what's it like for you? We were practicing together at a Dharma center. And I always felt so nervous going into the dining room, which was, you know, full of people. You know, I could do it. But I always had to stop before the door and take a few breaths. Okay, I can do this. I can do this. And I said, you know, Edie, I feel scared going in there. What's going on for you? What's going on in your mind? And she was like, oh, no, Tenku. I just think, oh, the possibilities. So how can we shift from, will they like me? I don't know. Maybe they're not going to like me. To, oh, the possibilities. Sometimes we think, you know, we want to be useful. especially in our practice in the Dharma. I want to learn the Dharma because of this. I want to be a better person. I want to be more healthy. I want to be more involved in the world. We can want to do this to be useful. I also want to encourage you to see what it feels like to be useless. The teacher, Uchiyama Roshi, often, he really liked the phrase good for nothing. So for those of you who are native or who speak English well, you know this phrase good for nothing means good for nothing. Like it has no purpose, has no use in this world. Well, when Uchiyama Roshi heard this phrase, as a non-native speaker, he heard it as something positive, good for nothing. Like, I like that. This practice is good for nothing. Nothing is good. So much space in that. And the space that's in that is the space of connection. You know, again, we've seen this so much this year during this pandemic. And in the short article that I shared with you prior to this talk, I wrote about my experience working as a chaplain in the hospital during this time, and also my own experience being sick with COVID. And we're in a time, as we always are, but it's especially up for us right now where we simply can't know. We don't know when this pandemic will end. We've slowly started to be able to see our families again, but for those of us like me who were separated from our parents by distance, by age, by illness, I didn't even know when I would see my parents again. For a long time, we didn't know when the vaccine was coming. And now we don't know the effects of the vaccine. So during this time of not knowing, this has been a year of practicing with this. And this is a theme I've been talking about a lot this year in practice. How can we be present to not knowing? What does that offer for us? Many years ago, when I was living in Japan and teaching in a high school when I was in my 20s, my parents decided to come and visit me. You know, they had never been anywhere. I grew up in a really rural place in northern Florida. And people just don't travel a whole lot from there. So for them to come to Japan was a big deal. So I made some plans for them. I really wanted to show them my town. And my mother did a cooking class on Southern cooking at the high school where I was teaching. We went to see a volcano. It was, you know, fun things. So I had sent them an email. And I said, you know, here's some of the ideas I have for the week. And when they showed up, my mother was super excited, and my dad had printed the email. So this is the difference between my parents. So the first day they woke up, and my mother was like, what are we going to do today? I'm in Japan. This is so great. And my father was like, okay, so it says here, visit shrine. So when do we leave? And this was our trip. One day we visited an active volcano in southern Japan. There's a volcano called Asosan. And my mother was so excited that she took entire two rolls of film. This is when we still had film and not digital cameras. Two rolls of film of nothing except gray steam and rocks. She was running. She was looking all around. Oh my goodness, I've never seen this before. And my father was wanting to know, a little bit more about if this was safe and what are those buildings over there for, Tengku? And I'm like, well, that's in case the volcano, blows up. Then we can go get in there and be safe. And he was like, and finally it came to a typhoon arrived. And what does my mom want to do? She wants to go outside and look around in the typhoon. And my dad wasn't having that. He stayed in. We went out. And then the next day we had to travel. And the not knowing for my dad made him so anxious that I remember when we were on the train platform and the schedules were all messed up, and he took me over to what I figured out was a fire closet, and it had about this much Japanese writing on the outside of the door. And he was like, "Tengku, what does this say?" And I was like, "Oh no, I am not translating the whole disclosure from the fire closet for you, Dad. Why don't you sit down right here? And I'm gonna go get you something nice to eat, and the train's gonna come when it's gonna come." I think we all go through this tension, right? It's not about my parents. It's not that one way is good and one way is not good. Sometimes we really need to know. Like I said, we need to learn the Dharma. We need to receive the teachings. We need to have a basic schedule in our life. And there are other times when we simply can't know, which maybe is all the time. And we can approach that with fear and trepidation, or we can approach that with curiosity. And what I want to offer today is that approaching that with just an openness, maybe not even with curiosity, but with just an openness, allows us to better understand each other and to connect. When we let go of trying to be the expert, trying to know everything, there's so much possibility. And part of that possibility is simply to be a human being in this world, trying to make it through. And in this, we are all connected. As I said, in this pandemic, we've really learned how to simply be with each other. Maybe we can't have the answers, but we can reach out to our neighbor. Maybe we hadn't even spoken with that neighbor much before, but when we shift from a focus on me, will I be okay? To, I wonder if Lee over there is okay. Then it lets us open up. It lets us really cultivate spaciousness. And in that spaciousness, we can connect. I was listening to a talk this morning, or maybe yesterday, on activism and how things, what works. And the question on everybody's mind right now here in the United States has to do with the outcome of the trial for the person who killed George Floyd, gun violence, racism. And of course, COVID. And I guess that's probably what the helicopters are about today, is protest activity around. in the middle of that, how are we going to connect? So the podcast I was listening to was going back in time to the AIDS epidemic. And the group ACT UP was very active in a way that was often angry or often disruptive. And a key player during that time was Dr. Anthony Fauci, whom you may have heard of, but here in the United States, he's heading up the task force for the research for COVID and the response to that. So we've seen him here in the news quite a lot. So Dr. Fauci was also very involved in the research for a cure or a treatment for AIDS, for HIV and AIDS. And a lot of the activists felt like he wasn't working fast enough and got pretty angry. And it started, I don't know where it started, but at one point, Larry Kramer wrote an article in which he called Dr. Fauci a murderer. Right? Ouch. I gave up my whole career path to focus on AIDS. My colleagues don't like me anymore. And now you want to call me a murderer? He could have had that approach. But you know what? He didn't. That makes me almost want to cry every time I think about it. He reached out to him and to others. And he invited them for dinner. And they would talk. Dr. Fauci, Larry Kramer, all the different activists. And he listened to them. And he even visited their places, not his places. And those conversations continued. And you know what he said when they asked him about it? They said, how could you do that? They called you a murderer. And you later, wasn't just that. They staged a protest. They were actually having dinner at Dr. Fauci's house, sipping wine together. And they said, you know, we've decided to do an action against you. Sorry, Tony. During that action, they had a figure of him with his head on a stake. And they stormed his office. And they stormed his office. And one guy scaled the wall. The police arrested him. And at the time they were getting Dr. Fauci out to get him safe, he sees the guy, and you know, in handcuffs, and he's like, oh, hey, Peter, what are you doing? And he was like, oh, you know, we're protesting against you today. And he said, well, you know, we'll see you tomorrow. How did this guy do this? And you know what he said? He said, I figured if people were that angry, there's a reason for it. And I didn't know the reason, so I thought I'd ask. What if we did that? Here in the United States, we have a lot of anger right now. Where are you in that? Are you angry? Are you afraid of the anger? Do you not understand it? We can ask. When we ask, we can listen. Asking can be a little scary. But if we're not invested in being the expert, the possibilities for learning and growth are huge. This is not knowing as well. Not being invested in ourselves, but shifting our focus toward the benefit of all. This is a very active not knowing. This is our practice being realized, you know? So we're trying to do our practice in a way where we're very knowledgeable, important. There's no space. The more I think I know, the less space there is for me to connect. The more I don't know, the more curiosity I have about others. The more I'm willing to be vulnerable, the more space there is for connection with the entire universe. And this is how we learn and grow from not knowing. And Dr. Fauci said he credited his parents for teaching him this. He said, I was raised to have a lot of curiosity about others. And he also credited his religious practice as a Jesuit for this letting go of the need to be the one who knows everything. And for those of you who have seen him or heard him speak, you'll see a lot of humility there. So inspiring. The podcast is called Radio Lab, and it comes out of New York City. It's so inspiring. This is a way we can really generate not knowing as well. When we see others who inspire us, spark something. How did he do that? He reached out to somebody who hated him and invited them for dinner. Could I do that? I don't know. That's so scary. But maybe I could. Maybe I could. When we generate faith and really practice, you know, when we're doing our practice, starting, you know, we have our meditation practice where we do this over and over and over. We have a thought, we let go of it, we return to the breath and to not knowing. We have an idea, we let go of it, we return to the breath. And then we go out into our life off of the cushion. We meet a new person. We have an opinion of them. We can let go of it and return to not knowing. Ooh, they have on a red hat. Maybe I don't like them. How do I know that? Hey, how are you doing? Well, I'm having a hard time. Look at that connection. So we can choose. We can go through our life in a way that builds a wall around ourselves, or we can let go of the wall. And this is true not knowing. And the more we do this, and the more we see that it actually works, the more faith we have that it will work. So we both develop faith from the inside out, you know, through our own practice and through trying it out and doing it. And we also develop faith through the positive examples of others, like Dr. Fauci, like so many more. I read this beautiful book a couple of years ago, written by a woman called Tracy Franz. It's called My Year of Dirt and Water. And she's living in another culture as a foreigner and trying to figure out how to do that. And a phrase that she uses many times is, we don't get to know. So you see her struggling with that during the book. Sometimes she really wants to know, but she doesn't get to. And at some point, you see an ease come in. Well, I don't get to know. So what? The teacher Shanti Deva has this teaching that um, if I can do something about it, why get upset? If I can't do anything about it, why get upset? So when she lets go of the upset, the we don't get to know, but I want to. When she lets go of that extra, you see a lot of spaciousness come in, a lot of wonder and connection and friendships and contentment. We can do this. So I want to ask you today, in closing, how do you want to be in the world? Do you want to move through the world full of knowing, but yet closed? Or maybe could you shift to a place of openness? Again, it's scary. We have to be vulnerable. Maybe they won't like us. So what? If I can do anything about it, why get upset? And if I can't do anything about it, why get upset? The most important thing is to be real, to be human, to follow this path, this beautiful path that's been given to us through the Buddhas and ancestors over 2,600 years. To follow this path in a way that's fully real, that fully shows up with vulnerability, with kindness for others, with curiosity. And this is true, not knowing. Because I can't tell you what's going to happen tomorrow. But I can tell you that in this moment, we're all here together practicing the Buddha's way. And it's beautiful. Thank you so much. So I'm going to open for questions now. And before I do that, I'd like to say a reminder that Sangha Live operates on the perfection of generosity. So, what makes the perfection different from simply generosity? It's our intention. Can we give in a way that's full of intention for the benefit of others? So this is what I would like to ask you to consider. We can support the Dharma through our offerings to the Dharma. And if we can do this with an open heart and freely, then everything comes right back to us because it's not about the thing. It's about the openness. So they asked me to give a reminder about the perfection of generosity, so I will. That's it. And a general rule that I often tell people, I heard somebody say this once, is to find a place, an amount that you're comfortable with and stretch it just a little bit. But don't stretch it so far that you'll never come back. And don't stay in the middle where it's too safe. Well, find your edge and stretch it just a little bit. And this is a good rule for everything in life. So, questions. You can either ask a question in the Ask a Question button in the bottom. And I think you can also be brave and speak your question on camera. So I'm going to open the questions and you can just type it in if you have a question. Thank you all so much for being here together. Or if you just want to add something, then you can do that as well. So I'll start with this question from Jana. I've struggled with anxiety, often have the feeling about losing control when coming into not knowing, like into the negative side of it. How can I work on it? How is the relating or work through it? So this is when we can shift our focus. Remember my friend Edie, who goes into the dining room thinking, oh, the possibilities. We don't have to magically turn into an extrovert, but we can shift from, oh no, are those people gonna like me? To how can I be of service? We can shift from, I don't know what's gonna happen, to looking around the room and finding that one person who's also sitting by themselves. So we don't have to do everything on a big scale, but we can do it human to human to human to human. And this is how we face our fears, shifting our focus from what's gonna happen to me towards how can I be of benefit in the world? If we start even a little bit with that, you know, I think of myself, I always was scared of dogs. So, but when I shifted my focus from, oh my gosh, is that dog gonna bite me? To as soon as I saw it coming, oh, how can I make myself more gentle so that that dog won't be afraid of me? Of course, you know, if that dog's afraid of me, there's a higher likelihood that it's gonna bite me. But I can shift myself. You know, I don't have to make the dog shift. So this is how we work with anxiety and fears. Somebody said they'd like to invite someone out for coffee. I just would encourage you to ask a lot of questions and really listen fully. Don't even, you know, if they ask you questions about yourself, fine, but at least for that first coffee, just listen and see what you can find out. People have the best stories. They have so many stories. Let's see. There's a question about connecting intuition to the theme of not knowing. I guess intuition is that knowledge in our gut or that gut check. And I'm not quite sure where this question is going, so I'm going to try. And if I'm off, you can tell me. Our intuition gives us valuable information and really useful to us. And if we can even let go of our intuition, then there's even more space for not knowing. So perhaps intuition comes out of a combination of knowing and not knowing. You know, information we get from nonverbal cues, from what we hear, what we already know. And it's that gut check that we have. And we can use that information, but without getting attached to it, without getting fixed on it, if that makes sense. You know, my gut check might be that man with the hat on is scary. So then I have to sort of leave that aside a little bit and still have curiosity. So intuition shouldn't supplant not knowing, but it can be a friend to not knowing. There's another question. How can we be open to other people when there might be a real threat or danger? Not just that they might not like me, but they could be racist, transphobic, not wear a mask, etc. This is a huge theme for our time. We can't change people, but we can meet one person at a time. And there's no reason to put yourself in danger with some high-minded ideal of I'm going to meet all of these people, but we can find ways in. We can find inroads. You know, that we can have the coffee with that one person. We can ask questions to a colleague at work who has different political views from us and simply listen. Recently, I had to travel to Florida, which is where I grew up and where my parents are. And I haven't seen my parents since 2019. And I certainly had not been out of New York. And I think probably many of you know, New York experienced a really big surge, early surge of COVID cases and deaths. So I went down to Florida and I was very nervous about flying. And I got off the plane and I found a really different culture around wearing masks than what I was used to. And I found it really frightening. But I soon realized that, you know, they don't know. And that's the phrase that kept coming up in my head was, started off kind of afraid. I was like, they don't know what I've been through. They don't know what I've been through. And then it shifted to, they don't know what I've been through. And so in that way, that shift from fear to curiosity, I could meet one person at a time. And, you know, eventually I went and I visited my uncle, who a real anti-mask person and a nice guy. But he got COVID himself, and I heard a story. I listened to him talk, and at the end of it, my aunt, who's a nurse, asked him, or somebody asked him, maybe he volunteered this information. He said, somebody asked me how I feel about the vaccine now. And he'd been originally a really anti vaccine person. And he said, I would tell someone to get it. He said, I didn't know. I didn't know what it was like. And when he said those words, he said them with humility and with softness. So rather than, you know, trying to meet everyone who's terrifying, I would suggest one person at a time. But do try, you know, do try one person at a time. Going to take another question. How do I approach not knowing around death without being terrified? From Anne. Death is also something that's quite scary until we develop a curiosity around it. So I don't know that it ever stops being a little bit frightening for everyone. And avoiding the topic and avoiding the idea is not going to help us learn to be more comfortable with the inevitability of it. It's coming. All of us are going to die. I mean, we're humans. Of course, we're going to die. So given that it's going to happen and we don't know when, we may as well develop some curiosity around it or some even friendliness around it. And the way we can do that is thinking about it, asking about it, talking about it. You know, my parents are getting older. They had never been afraid to talk about death. And, you know, maybe it's because my mother grew up on a farm where she saw a lot of death. I don't know, but just something they talked about. Other people are don't even know how to bring it up. So try bringing it up. Maybe, you know, Maybe it won't go well the first time. That's the risk of leaning in to not knowing. And you know what? That's okay. If things don't go well, that's really good information for us. We can learn and grow from the things that don't go well. Oh, I didn't ask that question that so well that time. How can I shift it and try again? And if we make this a lifetime process, then we get a lifetime of benefit from it. But if we do the opposite, you know, if we shut down, I tried that, it didn't go well, I'm not doing that again, then we get a lifetime of removing ourselves. So ask, approach the topic, try it with your practice. Maybe volunteer with hospice. All of these are great ways to learn about being around death. Thank you. Okay, so I can lean into not knowing on the cushion and I'm good with it. And then when I go out into the world, it's different. When I open up and I'm vulnerable with some people who do not in return open up. And make themselves vulnerable and instead profit from my vulnerability to make themselves feel better, look better, then I get lost. What can you say about this? What can I do? Whoa, that's a really good question. So the word loss stands out for me. Lost is another word for dukkha or suffering. Why do we suffer? We know suffering exists. We suffer because we hold on to things. Third noble truth, the release of suffering is possible. And then the fourth noble truth is the Eightfold Noble Path by following the path. So let's look at that through this lens. We learn when we're on the cushion about letting go. And then we go out and we meet with others. And we try out things and they don't go well. So let's let that teach us. Just like when we watch our thoughts come up and we let them go over and over. We try to talk to someone in a way that's vulnerable and open, and they don't do that back. Let it go. You know, if they're going to profit from your vulnerability, maybe that's not a good friendship for you. We're allowed to have boundaries. We don't have to give infinitely. We have to simply know our place in the world and how to go through it. And completely giving over to what other people want from us or what other people need from us is not the path. The path is standing on our own 2 feet and walking forward with confidence in the Dharma and in the path itself, confidence to try and to learn. And part of that learning might be, I shared a little too much that time. How can I do that in the future that the person can connect with? Or maybe this isn't the right person. Or, you know, think about the principles of right speech. Is it the right time? True? Did I speak to them gently? Was it necessary? And did I speak with kindness? There are always things in the Dharma that can help us to learn and grow if we keep returning to them. So yeah, try it out, make mistakes, learn from those mistakes, and try again. This is the path. Thank you. Let's see. What are ways to be with not knowing? Or, I'm sorry, my knees cramped. Or how can we let go of wanting to know or attachment to knowing? How can we let go? I think this one, this really comes back to what I said about faith. The more we practice, and we need the Dharma, we need the teachings to guide us, and we need a teacher to guide us, and the support of a community to support us in our practice. And the more we do it, the more we really practice, the more we start to, like I said before, really digest the teachings. So the ways to be with not knowing are kind of like the out-breath. We can't go through our whole practice only taking in, only taking in, only taking in. Just like we can't breathe, only breathing in. It's not possible. We have to let go. So try it now. Breathe in and fully let go. And notice that little sense of ease that comes in at the bottom of the breath before the next breath goes in. I guess you asked about the way to let go or wanting to know, of wanting to know or attaching to it. The way is the practice itself. The way is the doing it. So I encourage you to continue doing it and let that doing it teach you. Let the teachings align with your inner teacher and let those come together to really show you the path forward. Thank you. Walking in newness. Is that unknowing? Huh. Maybe. Walking in newness. I think sometimes we talk about beginner's mind in association with not knowing, and walking in newness could be like beginner's mind. The teacher, Shunyu Suzuki, was known for saying, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities, and in the expert's mind, there are few. So I think so. Walking in newness is that unknown. I would say it's not knowing. And sure, walking in newness is a beautiful way of putting that. I really like that phrase. Thank you. Yeah, activism. I'm glad you asked this. That's Brian. Yeah, that was really coming up for me today in thinking about the trial and the outcomes. Listening to the news this morning, somebody made the comment, or I think a reporter asked somebody in Minneapolis, which is where the killing happened, what the mood was like. And the response was, if the police officer who killed George Floyd is gets away with it or is not found guilty, then the whole city will just erupt. And I think that could be true. I think that could be true in a lot of different ways. Last year, when the, it's not about this one killing, it's about so many over and over and over, and people are so tired. so tired. Last year, when it happened, we saw protests erupt all over the world. So, what is the role of not knowing in terms of activism? I think we really have to learn and grow from each other and to show up in a way that both models our practice and models humility. We can bring our practice to activism. That's certainly possible. The question I would ask is, how are we going to do that? And the how shouldn't be any different from any other aspect of our life. When we make the practice the center of our life, we can show up even to the most difficult circumstances with authenticity, with vulnerability, to be real and really have an effect. So I guess I'm thinking back to a year ago when we were all so shocked by the death of George Floyd. Shocked isn't really the right word, but saddened, grieving for the death of George Floyd. And people really took to the streets. So I also joined a lot of the protests. And but as you can see, I'm a priest and I have a certain role. So I decided to walk through the middle with stillness and to talk to people, to meet people, to be in the middle of that chaos without joining the chaos. To be like the eye of the hurricane. And that's what I chose for my based on my practice. So I guess I'd ask you, what would you choose based on your practice? How are you going to show up? Because not showing up isn't an option, but there's so many different ways to show up. We also at Beacons and Temple, we spent those 49 days of mourning really looking at racism in our society. For those of us who are white, looking at the way that being white can cause harm, or our implicit bias, the things that we don't know about ourselves, our secrets we don't even know we have. How can that cause harm? And how can we shift our focus from causing harm, even unintentionally, even accidentally, or even completely unknowingly causing harm, towards being a benefit of the world? The Tibetan teacher, Sundam Rinpoche, says, on the topic of nonviolence, if we practice nonviolence and have anger in our hearts, then our nonviolence is not truly nonviolence. I've thought of this so many times. Anger is a natural human emotion to an unjust situation. The question is, what are we going to do with it? How are we going to let that anger teach us rather than control us? How are we going to learn and grow from our anger to make the world a better place rather than being consumed by the anger and letting it harm us and others? So this is where I think he was going when he was saying that as long as we hold anger in our hearts, our nonviolence is not truly nonviolence. That's a lot to work on. Okay. So I think we're both at the end of the questions and at the end of the time. That worked out really well. So I think I close, is that correct? So I'd like to close with the Bodhisattva vows. and I'll do them in English, and I'll encourage you just really try it out, see what it's like. See what it feels like to go into even a difficult situation with an attitude of spaciousness and curiosity rather than tightness. And just observe how that changes the whole situation. If it does, maybe it won't. But just observe, take in the information and use it. Okay. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Thank you all for being here today. It was so great practicing together with you. And enjoy the rest of your day or your evening. Take good care.